This is VOA News via remote. I'm Marissa Melton. Expectation that Russia would invade Ukraine grew on Wednesday, leaving the White House with some tough questions to answer. AP's Mike Gracia has more.
Fears of war in Ukraine have ramped up after the Kremlin announced that rebel leaders in eastern Ukraine have requested Russian military assistance to fend off what was termed Ukrainian aggression. At the White House, Press Secretary Jen Psaki labeled it an expected false flag operation.
That is suggesting that they feel under threat. By whom? The Ukrainians that the Russians are threatening to attack?
Asked about Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison saying he expects a Russian attack on Ukraine within 24 hours, Psaki said,
I'm not going to give an additional timeline to it. We have been saying it could happen at any time, and they are in attack position for some time now.
In Ukraine, a nationwide state of emergency that will run 30 days starts Thursday. Mike Gracia, Washington.
A few moments ago, U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Linda Thomas-Greenfield addressed the U.N. Security Council as they met 9:30 this evening, Washington time, to talk again about Ukraine. She warned again that further Russian invasion of Ukraine is imminent, and she laid the blame for the crisis squarely on Russia and quoted Ukraine's foreign minister, Dmytro Kuleba, who spoke earlier in the day. Kuleba said, quote, no one will be able to sit out this crisis if Putin moves forward with aggression against Ukraine. Kuleba also urged the international community to take swift, concrete, and resolute actions to help preserve Ukraine from Russian military aggression. He said Russia will not stop at Ukraine. He said a full-scale war against Ukraine would be the end of world order as we know it. More on that story at our website, voanews.com. From Washington, this is VOA News. Top U.S. lawmakers on Wednesday called Russian President Vladimir Putin's incursion into the occupied regions of Donetsk and Luhansk in eastern Ukraine an assault on democracy. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said in a press conference that it is stunning to see a tyrant, in her words, rolling into a country. With the word tyrant, she was referring to Putin, who U.S. officials say interfered in U.S. presidential elections in 2016. Pelosi and other top Democrats praised U.S. President Joe Biden for working with European allies to maintain a united front against Russia. The U.S. maternal mortality rate, already the worst in the industrialized world, rose in 2020 to its highest level in half a century. Black women were three times more likely to die than white women. A National Center for Health Statistics report showed the rate was 23.8 deaths per 100,000 live births, far higher than comparable countries such as Canada, which had 7.5 deaths per 100,000 live births. The WHO defines maternal mortality as death while pregnant or within 42 days of the end of pregnancy. The United States on Wednesday announced sanctions against what it said were members of an international financing network for Yemen's Houthi rebels after the Iran-backed group recently escalated cross-border drone and missile attacks on its oil-rich Gulf neighbors. The penalties from the Treasury Department appear to fall short of the tougher measures that Saudis and Emiratis, key strategic partners of the U.S., had sought from the Biden administration. The U.S. officials have been in talks with Saudi Arabia and the UAE as the crisis in Ukraine worsens, high petroleum prices and a supply shortfall. Gambia appealed to the United Nations' highest court Wednesday to reject Myanmar's legal effort to end a case alleging genocide by the Southeast Asian country against its Rohingya Muslim minority. Gambia brought the case before the International Court of Justice in 2019, arguing the Myanmar government violated the 1948 Genocide Convention during a 2017 crackdown on the Rohingya. Gambia argues the crackdown amounted to genocide and that the world court must hold Myanmar accountable. And European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen has announced a more than $172 billion investment plan for Africa. It's part of the European Union's Global Gateway Infrastructure Initiative. Again, for more on all the stories we're covering, check out our website, voanews.com. I'm Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Thursday, February 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Ukraine's president declares a state of emergency as fears of Russian invasion grow.
Russian forces are closing in around Ukraine's borders. They're ready to conduct military action, he said, at virtually any time now.
International aid agencies race against time to deliver supplies to thousands affected by another cyclone in Madagascar.
Red Cross volunteers have been deployed in different areas, facilitating the evacuation activities, but also providing first aid activities as necessary as needed.
Also, the UN warns that climate change will lead to more wildfires in large parts of the world. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Lawmakers in Ukraine have approved a nationwide state of emergency amid fears of an all-out Russian invasion. The parliament approved Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's decree imposing the measure for 30 days starting Thursday. The state of emergency allows authorities to impose restrictions on movement, block rallies and ban political parties and organizations, quote, in the interest of national security and public order, unquote. The move follows Russian President Vladimir Putin's decision Monday to recognize the independence of pro-separatist regions in eastern Ukraine, where the nearly eight-year conflict has killed over 14,000 people. This, as the Pentagon keeps a wary eye on the movement of Russian troops into eastern Ukraine. For more, I spoke with VOA's Pentagon correspondent, Carla Bob.
Spoke with Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby. He pointed out that Russian forces are closing in around Ukraine's borders. They're ready to conduct military action, he said, at virtually any time now. And a senior defense official had spoken to us earlier and had explained that there are more than 150,000 Russian forces surrounding Ukraine right now. And of those, at least 80% are in kind of strike mode. They're in a readiness phase where they could go in at any time. Some of these units are placed just a few kilometers away from Ukraine's borders. But I mean, even if you're not focusing on where the troops are physically, there are so many additional things that the Russians have stationed near the border that could cause a lot of damage inside Ukraine. If you think about, they have this Iskander-M, which is a ballistic missile weapon that can fire, the range is over 300 miles, which is 500 kilometers, which can reach well, you know, halfway across Ukraine. They've got fighter jets, bombers. They've got bombers that they can fire at Ukraine without even violating Ukraine's airspace. You know, they could fire from Russia and hit Ukrainian forces. So there's all of this attack readiness surrounding Ukraine, and it is really a scary time now for Ukraine and the entire world that's watching.
President Biden ordered a repositioning of American forces. What is that, and how is the Pentagon carrying this out?
President Biden announced that we were going to be seeing about 1,000 forces moving from the center part of Europe in Italy and in Germany over towards the eastern flank, the Baltic states and also Poland. There's going to be a battalion moving from Italy. A battalion's roughly 800 to 1,000 troops, and they're going to be moving into the Baltics. And then in addition to those troops who are moving, we're also going to be seeing 8 F-35 fighter jets moving into the Baltic region. We're going to see a bunch of Apache helicopters moving into the Baltic region, and we're also going to see some Apache helicopters moving from Greece into Poland as well. Nothing huge and substantial, but something that the Pentagon says is to increase the readiness on the eastern flank and to help deter Russia from moving into NATO's territory, because the U.S. and President Biden has been clear that any step that Russian forces take into NATO territory will be defended vehemently by everyone in NATO. And the U.S. has definitely said that it's going to stand by its commitments to NATO, that an attack on one is an attack on all. And so they're trying to keep that eastern flank as defended as possible.
With the kind of assets the Russian forces have surrounding Ukraine, some analysts are saying there just might be an accident with American forces in and around that area. Is the Pentagon considering the unintended consequence of American forces suffering casualties? And what are they planning, or what are they thinking about that?
That's on defense leaders' minds constantly. I was just traveling with Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, and I asked him just on Saturday, when the Russians were carrying out these missile exercises just across the border, we were sitting there in Lithuania, and I said, you know, what do you have to say about those nuclear mission exercises that they're doing? And he said, you know, of course, We worry that these things could cause unintended miscalculation. And so the U.S. and NATO are trying to prepare for that by stating that they're not going to fight in Ukraine. And they have said that they're not going to send combat forces into Ukraine. They're going to send weapons, monetary supplies, and medical supplies, and everything they possibly can to help Ukraine better defend itself, because all the NATO alliance members feel that Ukraine has the right to choose whether it wants to be a part of NATO, whether it wants to be closer to Russia. That's up to Ukraine. That's not up to Russia or any other outside nation to dictate to Ukraine what it can and what it can't do. And NATO and the United States see what Russia is doing as bullying and trying to influence the Ukrainians in a way that is not allowed under the international norms and the international rules. So that's what they're going to continue to do, but they are stopping short of sending combat troops into Ukraine because they don't want this to break out into a full war between the United States, NATO, and Russia.
That's VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob speaking with me from Washington. The recognition by Russian President Vladimir Putin of two self-proclaimed republics within Ukrainian territory has created an uncertain scenario for Russians, as war and economic sanctions point to a troubled future. Along Russia's border with eastern Ukraine, interviews with some members of the local population suggest some are eager to fight, while others say there is less patriotic fervor this time than in 2014, when Russia annexed Crimea. John Speer narrates this report from the Russian city of Rostov-on-Don.
On the banks of the Don River is the city of Rostov, one of the largest cities in southern Russia and just 90 kilometers from the border with Ukraine. Thousands of people are coming this far from the Luhansk and Donetsk regions, displaced by the growing conflict. As they arrive, concerns mount over what a war and its consequences will have on the lives of Russia's population. Dmitry Volk lives in Rostov-on-Don. I am worried, he says, about how this is going to affect normal people, the economy. Will the dollar rise again? Will wages fall? Will there be military operations? We don't know what is happening. The vast majority of people do not know the truth of what is happening. For some people, the price to pay for Russia's military involvement in the conflict in neighboring Ukraine is too high. They say this time is not like in 2014, when the annexation of Crimea had broad popular support. One resident, Vadim, asked not to give his surname. I do not support this decision. Okay, they have a conflict, but it's an internal matter, he says. Why should we get involved in it? Why recognize their independence? It's another country. Let them fix their problems. And now, because of this decision, I don't know what will happen next week. Others say they are willing to pay whatever price is necessary. Rostov resident Alexandra Kashienko says she is ready to make the sacrifice and fight for Russia's interests. My family and I fully support Vladimir Putin's decision to recognize these republics, she says. We have suffered a lot since 2014, a lot of pain in our hearts. It's not something minor for us. We are willing to bear the sanctions. Many in this part of Russia have family and social ties with Luhansk and Donetsk, and despite political differences on Russia's recognition of the independence of these territories, all said they agree in wanting the violence to stop. Nadezhda, who also asked to withhold her surname, said she sees no one coming out a winner in this conflict. I have acquaintances, friends and co-workers there, she says. My parents are there now. Obviously, I'm worried because the situation there is bad. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. The new sanctions against Russia have been imposed, while on the street, uncertainty, worry about the future, and fear of a larger war weigh down the mood of the Russians. For VOA reporters in Rostov-on-Don, Russia, John Speer, VOA News.
The UN Children's Fund says the psychosocial well-being of an entire generation of Ukrainian children is at risk from war in the country's eastern Donbas region. With legions of Russian troops now pouring in, the situation is only worse, as VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports.
From her house in Kyiv, Anna Voits closely monitors the situation in Ukraine's Luhansk region, which on Monday was recognized by Russian President Vladimir Putin as, quote, independent state, unquote. and where Voight's relatives live in the shadow of war.
My six-year-old niece does not go to school and her dance class because of the shelling around the city.
Voight, her husband, and their three sons fled the region 8 years ago after Russia annexed Crimea and instigated a separatist war in eastern Ukraine. It was hard on the children.
We could not even rent an apartment because we, as internally displaced persons, were denied housing. They also refused us housing because they saw that we have three children. The children saw our emotional struggle.
But for families that can't flee, the trauma persists and is worsening now as more Russian troops officially move in. After artillery shells hit a kindergarten in the Eastern Territories on February 17, UNICEF warned, quote, "The conflict has taken a severe toll on the psychosocial well-being of an entire generation of children," unquote. Local child advocates say the trauma is evident in many ways. SOS Children's Village's national director in Ukraine, Serhii Lukashov.
It is becoming the part of their personality through the passive aggression, through the difficulties for younger children, difficulties in communication.
Julius Kubietsa is the project director at the War Childhood Museum in Ukraine.
It's not just about psychological effect. It's about chronic diseases that develop because of the stress, because of the lack of access to fulfilling the basic needs, because of the loss of safety.
An advisor to the United Nations on Displaced People, Professor Elizabeth Ferris, says she's terrified there will be a full-scale Russian invasion. Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Washington.
The Biden administration announced on Tuesday actions taken by the federal government and private industry that it says will bolster the supply chain of rare earth and other critical minerals used in technologies from household appliances and electronics to defense systems. They say these steps will reduce the nation's dependency on China, a major producer of these elements. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wedaskuwara has this report.
To build military jet planes, we need rare earth and other critical minerals like lithium and cobalt. The same goes for cars, computers, phones, and practically all other consumer electronics. Currently, China controls most of the global market of these minerals.
We can't build a future that's made in America if we ourselves are dependent on China for the materials that power the products of today and tomorrow.
On Tuesday, President Joe Biden announced actions taken by the federal government and private industry that he says will bolster the supply chain of rare earths and other critical minerals seen here at a Mongolian plant. The steps include a $35 million contract to MP Materials to process rare earth elements at its facility in California.
So your investment will complement more than $700 million that MP will invest by 2024 to create an American rare earth magnetics supply chain. As you said, these magnets are essential to our economy and the clean energy transition.
Rare earths are not really rare minerals, just difficult and expensive to mine and process cleanly. The U.S. is the second largest miner of rare earths after China, according to the latest government data. They are critical elements to transition to cleaner energy. Phoebe Moon is a doctoral candidate at University of California, Irvine, focusing on global supply chain.
So we are using more hydro energy, we are using more climate, environment friendly energy sources. And the list of rare earth materials that Biden administration announced that they will be targeting on this issue really has that in its heart.
Other steps the White House announced include a pilot project to recover critical minerals from waste from mines and projects to recycle battery materials. Earlier this week, Beijing announced sanctions aimed at restricting access to rare earth minerals by Lockheed Martin and Raytheon, two American companies that provide maintenance services to Taiwan's missile defense systems, which China considers its breakaway province. Last month, legislators introduced a bipartisan bill in the U.S. Senate that would prohibit defense contractors from procuring rare earths from China by 2026 and force the Pentagon to create a strategic reserve of those minerals by 2025. Patsy Wedaskuwara, VOA News, Washington.
The UN peacekeeping mission in the Central African Republic has rejected accusations that four of its personnel who were arrested Monday were engaged in suspicious activity. The CAR's public prosecutor said the four men arrested at the airport shortly before the arrival of the country's president were heavily armed. Carol Vallad has more from the capital, Bangui.
The UN peacekeeping mission, known as MINUSCA, is demanding the release of the four peacekeepers, all French soldiers. CAR authorities have not filed any charges against the men, but the country's public prosecutor said on national radio that an investigation is open on the case. He said the four men were arrested aboard a suspicious vehicle carrying a heavy military arsenal. Right after the arrest, messages on social media accused the peacekeepers of planning to assassinate CAR President Faustin Archange Touadéra, whose plane was about to land at the airport. MINUSCA spokesperson Vladimir Monteiro dismissed the accusation during a press conference on Wednesday.
Nous n'avons rien à cacher. La MINUSCA est là comme partenaire, est là comme ami. La MINUSCA regrette l'incident du lundi 21 février et condamne de nouveau la tentative d'instrumentalisation et de manipulation de l'opinion publique et rejette catégoriquement les accusations d'atteinte à la sûreté.
We have nothing to hide, he said. MINUSCA is here as a partner, as a friend. What's said on social media is disinformation. Montero said MINUSCA regrets the incident on Monday, February the 21st, and condemns again the intent to manipulate public opinion and firmly rejects the accusations of attacking state security. The four military personnel remain in police custody, but they are being treated well, says a source at the UN peacekeeping mission. The CAR government has refused to comment the case. Carole Vallade for VOA News, Bangui, Central African Republic.
In other news, a warming planet and land use changes mean more wildfires will scorch large parts of the globe in coming decades. That's according to a UN report released Wednesday that says many governments are ill-prepared to address the problem. The Western US, Northern Siberia, Central India, and Eastern Australia already are seeing more blazes. US researchers say the likelihood of catastrophic wildfires globally could increase by more than 50% by the turn of the century. The report calls for more awareness of the dangers from smoke inhalation, which can affect tens of thousands of people annually, as plumes from major wildfires drift thousands of miles across international borders. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Tropical storm Emenati slammed into eastern Madagascar on Tuesday, toppling power lines, uprooting trees accompanied by heavy rains, which has added to the misery of thousands of residents battered by three previous powerful storms. Aid agencies are scrambling to provide assistance, but have been hampered by washed-out roads that have cut off most communities. Dennis Barianga is operations coordinator for the International Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies. He talks about the challenges faced by volunteers in a race against time to provide aid to desperate survivors.
From yesterday, Red Cross volunteers have been deployed in different areas, facilitating the evacuation activities, but also providing first aid activities as necessary as needed. Then now, since people are already being hosted in the accommodation sites, the volunteers, the Red Cross volunteers, will continue to provide necessary assistance, like distributing water, shelter things, sleeping materials, etc., but also contributing as well to search some people who have been maybe affected seriously by the cyclone.
What are your greatest areas of need?
The greatest areas of need, of course, is related to basic needs, which is food, which is water, which is accommodation. We know that all the crops have now been inundated. People are not expecting from anything. So if you can at least provide something that can help them in this emergency situation, then the following assistance will come later. But now, food, water, sleeping materials, accommodation size is something that is very urgent for the moment.
Aside from your association, what other groups are aiding these victims of this latest cyclone?
There are many groups. First of all, the government is there, different ministries of there, of course, they are there, but also the UN agencies and different humanitarian actors. For us as Red Cross, we have already planned and are mobilizing to assist 10,000 households, which is 50,000 people, in different kind of assistance like food, like shelter, like water, etc., in big coordination with other humanitarian actors.
With the pandemic still with the entire world, how worried are you that putting people in closed shelters could be a super spreader?
That's why we are deploying our volunteers and Red Cross teams, but also other humanitarian actors to manage the accommodation sites and ensure that prevention measures of COVID-19 have to be respected, but also to ensure that, because when people are gathered together, they can provoke other diseases like waterborne disease. So we are already to make sure that people are respecting the preventive measures for COVID, but also for hygiene matter and sanitation issues.
That's Dennis Barryanga, Operations Coordinator for the International Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, speaking with me from Antananarivo. Dating back to 1926, every February, the U.S. remembers the contributions and sacrifices made by African Americans who helped form the country. Over the past year, more than 35 states have introduced more than 150 bills restricting what schools can teach about race. In part two of their conversation, VOA's Carol Van Dam asked Sam Forward, an author of several books on U.S. race relations and dean of the School of Communications at American University in Washington, D.C., why there is pushback about teaching what's called critical race theory in U.S. schools.
It has nothing to do with history. It has nothing to do with anything other than just naked politics in the country. We now have a situation in the United States where race is politicized in such a way as to draw favorable votes from our more right-leaning politicians and public advocates. And they have seen an opportunity to use race as a wedge to make a political statement. And that's what's happening now. It has nothing to do with teaching or history or any of that.
This year's theme is Black Health and Wellness, paying homage to medical scholars and healthcare providers. And of course, it seems especially important this year as the world is coping with the third year of the COVID-19 pandemic. How has the virus affected Black minority communities in particular, would you say?
Well, because of the disproportionate place that Black Americans have in our society relative to other communities, they have been more severely affected in terms of the COVID, as with almost all other kinds of health situations in the country. Black Americans have been more likely to contract COVID, to have longer stays in the hospital, and the percentage of Blacks who have died from COVID is higher than it is for the general population.
Is there anything that you want to say about Black History Month in terms of how our country celebrates it moving forward that you think could be improved?
You know, quite frankly, I don't think that celebrating a month is sufficient. I think that we have to understand that history is race neutral. It is colorblind, if you want to use that hackneyed term. History is. And what we need to do as a society is recognize in the fullness of history, there are stories that have been overlooked or not told, but they are nonetheless a part of the making of this country and the making of the world. And if you take a fulsome look of history, you have to recognize the role and the centrality that race has played in America. And that brings you directly to the contributions and the shortcomings as it relates to African Americans in our society.
That's Sam Forward, a public policy analyst and author of several books on U.S. race relations. He's also dean of the School of Communications at American University in Washington, D.C. He was speaking with my colleague, Carol Van Dam. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu in Washington, wishing you a great day.